Chapter 14. Hiram Yeager leaned back in his chair, hands folded behind his neck, and stared through his wire-rimmed granny glasses at the three-dimensional black-and-white photograph of the buxom Sumatran woman, made even more lifelike by the holographic display, who was projected on the huge monitor beyond his horseshoe-shaped console. He wondered how many millions of young males learned their first lesson in female anatomy from the dusky maidens in the pages of National Geographic magazine. With a sigh of dreamy nostalgia, Yeager said, "Thanks for the treat, Max."
"You're welcome," replied the computer's disembodied female voice. "I thought you'd enjoy a break from your work."
The nubile maiden disappeared, sent back to 1937, where she had been frozen in time by a geographic photographer.
"It's brought back fond memories," Yeager said, taking a sip from his coffee.
From his private terminal in a small side room, the chief of the agency's communications network could, in a blink of the eye, tap into the vast files of the computer data complex that occupied the entire 10th floor of the NUMA headquarters building. It was NUMA's hardware that usually made world headlines. The exploits of the high-tech research vessels, deep submergence submarines, and assorted undersea robots were what caught the public's imagination. But one of Sandecker's greatest contributions was NUMA's unseen jewel in the crown, the massive high-speed computer network. Yeager had designed with a free hand and unlimited funding, thanks to the Admiral. Sandecker had lured Yeager to NUMA in a raid on a Silicon Valley computer corporation and assigned him to build what would undeniably be the finest and largest archive of ocean sciences in the world. The vast data library was Yeager's joy and his passion. It had taken years to put together centuries of human knowledge gleaned from books, articles, and scientific and historical theses. Everything known to have been written about the sea was available not only to NUMA, but to ocean science students, professional oceanographers, marine engineers, and underwater archaeologists worldwide. Yeager was the only person in NUMA who ignored Sandecker's dress code and got away with it, which spoke eloquently of his talents. With his Levi's jacket and jeans, his long blondish-gray hair tied in a ponytail, and the untamed whiskers that hid the boyish eagerness of his face, the scruffy Yeager could have come off a 60s hippie commune. In fact, Yeager did not live in a yurt, but drove to and from a fashionable Maryland suburb in a fully equipped BMW. His attractive wife was an artist. His two teenage daughters were students at a private school, and their main complaint was that Yeager spent more time with his electronic family than his flesh-and-blood one. Yeager was still in awe of the tremendous power at his command. He had given up the keyboard and monitor for spoken commands and the holographic display. His foray into the more revealing aspect of the geographic articles was an excuse to take a break from the demanding assignment he'd been working on at Sandecker's request. On the surface, Sandecker's directive had been uncomplicated. Find out if there were any attacks on archaeological expeditions similar to what happened in Morocco. It turned out to be a monumental task. He'd neglected his understanding wife and children even more than usual in his passion to solve the puzzle.
Although the NUMA system was geared to the oceans, Max routinely hacked into other systems, without authorization, to gather information and transfer data among libraries, newspaper morgues, research libraries, universities, and historic archives anywhere on the globe. Yeager began by compiling a master list of expeditions, divided chronologically by decades and going back 50 years. There were hundreds of names and dates on the list. Then he prepared a computer model based on the facts that were known about the Moroccan incident. He asked Max to compare the model to each expedition, drawing on various sources such as published academic papers, scientific journals, and news reports, cross-checking the accounts to determine if any of these expeditions had come to a similar unscheduled end always searching for patterns.
The sources were often fragmentary and sometimes dubious. Like a sculptor trying to find a figure in a piece of marble, he chipped the master list down in size.
It was still long and complicated enough to daunt the most experienced researcher, but the challenge only whetted his appetite. After several days, he had brought together an enormous amount of information. Now he would instruct the computers to sift through the data and refine the results into a palatable serving.
"Max, please print out your findings when you've exhausted your networks," he instructed the computer.
"I will get back to you shortly. Sorry for the delay," the soft monotone voice responded. "Why don't you pour yourself another cup of coffee while you wait?"
Time was irrelevant to a computer, Jaeger reflected as he followed Max's suggestion. It did what it did at unimaginable speeds. But no matter how fast and smart Max was, it had no concept of what it was like to have Sandecker breathing down its circuits. Jaeger had promised Sandecker the results by the following morning. While Max labored, Jaeger could have taken a break, walked to the Pneuma cafeteria, or simply left his sanctum sanctorum for a brisk walk. He hated to leave his electronic babies and instead used the time to explore other options. He stared up at the ceiling and remembered that Nina Kirov had said the killers came in the night, massacred the party, then disposed of the bodies.
"Max, let's take a look at assassins."
Max was actually a number of computers that, like the human brain, could work on several complicated tasks at the same time.
"That should be no problem."
A second later, the computer voice said,
"Assassins, an English analog of the Arabic hashashin, meaning one who is addicted to hashish. A secret 11th-century politico-religious Islamic order presided over by an absolute ruler and deputy masters. Unquestioning obedience was demanded of sect members known as the Devoted Ones, the actual hitmen who murdered political leaders and put their skills out for hire. The killers were given hashish and a heavy dose of sensual pleasures, and told this was a taste of the paradise that awaited them if they did their job. The sect spread terror for more than 200 years.
"Interesting. But how pertinent?" Jaeger tugged at his scraggly beard while Max described other groups of assassins, such as the Thugs of India and the Japanese Ninja. These groups didn't quite fit the profile of the Moroccan killers, but, more important, they had been out of business for centuries. He didn't dismiss them out of hand. If he were forming an assassin squad, he'd look toward the past to see how others had operated. Dr. Kirov said the killers destroyed a stone carving that could be evidence of pre-Columbian contact between the old and the new world. If he called up everything on pre-Columbian culture, even with Max's speed, it would take 10 years to sort things out. Instead, Jaeger had established what he called a parallel paradigm, basically a set of questions that asked the computer in different ways who would be upset by revelations that Columbus had not been the first Old World representative to set foot in the New World, and vice versa. A few days ago, he started the computers working on the problem but had been too busy until now to call up the findings. With the machines working on the main question posed by Sandecker, he had some time to review the results. He said,
"Call up Parpar," the code name he had given the unpronounceable parallel paradigm. "Parpar is ready, Hiram."
"Thanks, Max. Who would be upset at revelations Columbus did not discover America?"
"Some scholars, historians, and writers. Certain ethnic groups. Would you like specifics?"
"Not now. Would this belief be dangerous?"
"No.
Would you like me to pursue a link to the past?
Jaeger had programmed his computers to give short answers so they wouldn't go off on interminable tangents without exact instruction.
Go ahead, Jaeger said.
The Spanish Inquisition had made belief in pre-Columbian contact a heresy punishable by burning. The Inquisitors said Columbus was divinely inspired to bring Spanish civilization to the New World. Link to Vespucci?
Go ahead.
When Amerigo Vespucci proved scientifically that Columbus had not reached India but had discovered a new continent, he was threatened with heresy too.
Why was this so important?
Admitting someone else had discovered the New World would invalidate claims to its riches and weaken power of the Spanish state.
Jaeger pondered the reply.
Spain was no longer a world power, and its former lands in the Americas were all independent countries. There was something there he couldn't see. He felt like a child who knows there's a monster lurking in the shadows of his closet, can hear its heavy breathing and see the green eyes, only to have it disappear when he turns the lights on.
The computer softly dinged the Big Ben chimes, and a hologram caricature of himself smiling appeared.
"Processing and printing are complete," his animated doppelganger said. "Phew, I'm going out for a beer."
Jaeger spent so much time with this computer it was inevitable that he would program in a few personality traits.
"Thanks, Max. I'm buying," he said.
Wondering what he would do if Max ever took him up on his offer, Jaeger went into an adjoining room and retrieved the lengthy printout he'd requested. As he studied the Parpar report on archaeological expeditions, his eyes grew wider, and he began to repeat the word "incredible" under his breath. He was only partially through the report when he picked up the phone and punched out a number. A crisp voice answered.
"If you've got a minute, Admiral," Jaeger said, "I've got something I think you'd like to see."